The mission of the General Services Administration's 18F is spreading across government now. Its former executive director, Greg Godbout, was one of the first to take its mission to another agency. Greg's now chief technology officer at the Environmental Protection Agency. He says his vision for the CTO's office is to serve both the internal IT team and the mission delivery people. Greg Godbout is the chief technology officer at the Environmental Protection Agency, relatively new to EPA after coming from 18F at the General Services Administration. Greg, thanks for your time today. What do you see the role of chief technology officer being in an organization like EPA? Thanks for your time today, Greg.
Thank you for having me. I see my role as chief technology officer is really helping to transform the Office of Environmental Information, which is the CIO's office here at EPA, into what I would call a modern CIO's office, which is also taking care of everything you might imagine a CIO's office take care of, but also helping to drive mission value with the use of technology. So really getting into the services side of the organization and helping the organization, achieve its mission.
How is that a different mindset than we have traditionally seen, where the service is not necessarily just to the people in the agency, it sounds like? It sounds like the service is also to the people inside the IT shop as you're trying to help them be able to build a better framework for serving the rest of the customers inside the agency.
Yes, I think that traditionally, CIO shops are often thought of as sort of like IT departments, if you will, right? It's about taking care of computers, help desk, and essentially it's, often phrased as keeping the lights on IT, right? But there's, in all the work that we all do, no matter whoever's listening, we use IT to increase our productivity, to achieve our goals and our missions. And in the case of environmental protection, it's no different. And what we're looking to do is seek to really collaborate more, not just within OEI, but you mentioned that, and it's very true, but also across the agency with the program partners and the other functions. So we all work together as one cohesive cross-functional team, all working to delivering on mission value, as opposed to working in silos. So it's a very large change management strategy for government or large organizations, but it's key to improving delivery.
So there's a couple elements too, I think, to that change management that I believe I hear. One of them is helping people understand what the role of the IT shop is going to be. And the other is getting people to be receptive to the idea that that's what they should be, that it shouldn't just be we're the BlackBerry people, that we also have strategic contributions to make. And again, not just to IT, but to the overall mission of the organization. Am I on the right track, do you think, Greg?
You are. It's habitually, for people who've been in government, that's not how they've perceived their CIO's office, right? But there's sometimes a little bit of a chicken and egg argument there, in the sense that one of the things we're seeking to do is just simply build high-quality services that the program offices will want to consume, and will, by their saying so, not us, right, but by their saying so, you help me achieve my goals. And so it's really about becoming very customer service focused and very ultimately user-centered in every service that we provide.
So that sounds like the kind of mentality and mantra that I heard from you and others at 18F when you were there, which is, let's stop thinking about this particular project as an IT project, and let's think about it as a mission-oriented project that uses information technology.
That is exactly right, right? Your role changes how you think of yourself. So this is part of this overall larger digital services movement, and it's called a digital services movement because we live in the digital age, and the services we all receive in our personal lives with these digital devices, they are the services. Like, we don't go to a bank to do all of our banking. We bank wherever it's efficient and easy for us to bank. So the same is true for government services. They need to start making that transition into the technology needs to get out of the way, and it needs to become one seamless service. And we know it works when the customers enjoy it, they refer their friends to it, and they want to keep using it, and they engage with it. And that's really what we're going for, is ultimately improving services. Technology is one part of that, and that's the role I play, is helping bring technology to the table, to that mindset.
Greg, how much of that change management that you talked about has been just helping people to understand that it's okay, we're allowed to do it that way, whatever that way happens to be?
I would say that probably one of the biggest obstacles is that there is a perception within government that people's habits are laws. And it is very difficult for people to get off of some repetition. And because they did that repetition and it was okay to do that, the assumption was then that's the only way you can do it. And a lot of the discussions really get down into the nitty-gritty of, why are we doing it this way? Is there another way to do it? Can't we think outside the box on this one? And I've found, for the most part, that to be the largest barrier, if you will, is the perception that something isn't allowed, even though, quite frankly, it is allowed and very often is being encouraged, but it just doesn't seem to sit in or seep in.
I guess the good news is that that sounds like the kind of worldview that when it changes, it's a permanent change, and it's not something that you would have to continue to reteach and reteach and reteach. Is that fair?
That is an awesome, like, positive spin on it. I would twist that a little bit, and I would say that the reason we got to that space is because learning cultures are not invested in, or it's really about the culture of being in a large organization. Because this is not really unique to the federal government or public institutions. This is something that happens a lot in very large organizations. And the idea of embedding a learning culture, so the change management comes into play, is that create processes that you frequently challenge your current processes or thoughts, so that over time you're constantly iterating and you're doing continuous improvement instead of building to the next legacy system, for example, right? We could upgrade all the systems to the latest technology, but if we ignore them again, they will be legacy systems within just 5 years. Instead, we need to think about a continuous improvement, and that's really the important culture change, because the one thing I can promise you is all the methodologies and the things that I'm talking to people about, they will be different in 10 years, right? And we need to make sure that we're actually building for that, not building for just fixing the current problem.
So besides bringing this worldview and this idea of continuous improvement from 18F, how else has your tenure there informed what you're doing now at EPA?
I think there was a point, first of all, building 18F is going to be one of the great honors of my life. I mean, the team I worked with when we set this thing up, it was just wonderful, and I was the executive director of that process. And roughly, roughly about 10 months into doing that, something really hit me, and it was that there were so many people that wanted services from 18F from within government, and it wasn't about convincing them that they needed these services, right? It was that they were struggling to get these services through their existing channels. And so what I found was, I think one of the things that we did at 18F was to build a valuable shared service across the federal government, so valuable that so many people wanted to use it that we couldn't possibly grow fast enough to meet that demand. And that gets into the strategy of let's start. I wanted personally to go to another agency where I cared, very much for the mission, and I wanted to get there and help spread those same services that people wanted at 18F inside another agency.
So what you're talking about there gets right at the main critique that I heard of 18F when you stood it up, especially from industry, which is, hey, I thought we were supposed to do that. And it seems to me that although you were doing a terrific job of standing up this effort, there wasn't as much communication with industry, although it happened later on, to say, listen, we're not going to be able to meet all the demand. And we're essentially, it sounded to me at least, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it sounded to me like what you were doing was, this is going to be a pilot project of how we want this to work. And then we're going to make this available in a variety of forms to people all across government. And of course, because of the demand that's out there, industry is going to have to come along behind us and partner with us. And it strikes me that this Agile Acquisition BPA that we saw just within the last couple of weeks, the awards made, is kind of the manifestation of that. Am I connecting the dots the right way, do you think, Greg?
I think so. First of all, you covered a lot there, and I think you represented the story accurately, except the one thing I would change was we actually communicated from the beginning that 18F was about fixing acquisitions at the end of the day, because there's no way that you can take the 18F model, even over at EPA, right? There's no way to take it to service all the need. In fact, what we were communicating all along is this is such a gigantic marketplace. It's really not possible to service it in the way that people thought. But remember, as 18F came in and it was new, the vendors are just as important to government in execution of the government missions as the employees and all the other stakeholders, right? And they also were just as scared, right? There was a lot of comparisons to other models, and part of that was they thought, oh goodness, you know, the 18F is here to somehow compete with us. That was actually never the case. From the day one, it was we needed to bring in the capabilities to build out software in-house in order to make the proper buy versus build decision, and that federal government had been missing that ability to build. And if you didn't understand how things could be built, it makes it very difficult to make the proper buy decision. And so by having all of these people in-house, you end up changing all the functions that, frankly, the vendors can't change, right? The how things are financed, how acquisitions supports this, how HR supports this, all of the functions that need to change to do true agile inside the federal government. So 18F was and is still the sort of pilot for that, and the same is true for the model we're building here at EPA. It's we need to change the infrastructure in order to properly contract with the vendors and offer them to provide their agile services.
So I'll take your amendment to my suggestion and agree with it, actually. But it is the case, it seems to me, that the message that you put out didn't get through to the vendors in the way that made them comfortable, and you acknowledge that by talking about how they were a little shaky on the concept and people in government were as well. So now you're establishing the priority list that you have as you move forward at EPA. You've got 5 points there in your priority list. What are those, and how are you going about attacking them, Greg?
Sure. So I summarize them. It's a priority list, and I like to put services to priorities. So there are essentially 5 services. So the first would be what I would consider like business consultants. Okay, this groups are people who can go into a program and help assess where they are and help work with that program to figure out where's a good place to be. You know, using user-centered design and agile methodologies, and how can you get there? How can we like put together a roadmap to get there? They're largely, that business consulting group is very closely tied to going in and really problem solving, really focusing on what's the true problem and how do we engage the users to figure out the solution. It's sort of about finding value, if you will. The next group is technical architecture group, and this is not like technical architecture that you sort of print out and put on the wall, but instead this is technical architecture of consultants. They go in and they're about reuse and collaboration across the agency. So how do we reuse existing systems and tools and services and share that information? And then how do we inform ourselves on new tools and services that need to be built? And where do those exist, not only inside the agency, but across, you know, at other agencies as well? And you can imagine under reuse, there's a lot about like minimizing waste there. So if you think about lean methodologies, and if I can summarize lean in this phrase, it's maximizing value while minimizing waste. You know, you can look at this as the business consultants maximize value and the technical architecture consultants help to minimize the waste. So they work together in tandem to balance these lean methodologies. Underneath those two services are three others. One is an Agile Acquisition Services Group that is basically designed very similar to the BPA that came out with 18F, but more specifically geared towards the needs and desires of environmental protection. And the idea is to have a number of marketplaces where vendors, we cultivate vendors and scale these services with the vendors. So there'll be one group sort of managing that, another group managing fellowship and hiring programs we plan to create to bring in expertise over and embed on the program side so that these people can work as either technical leads or advisors and work in the programs full time to help move them towards the steps towards modern methodologies and stuff. The next group would be a pilot team, and this is about getting things started. So this would be a group of probably seven developers and UX designers and some data visualization experts who will go into certain programs and in 6 to 8 weeks spin something up, show what's possible so that they to get projects started quicker and help learn or maybe show value in something or also learn and bring down some of the uncertainty. So those are the general five services or five priority areas, and we expect others to spin out of those, but those are the key that I would say is to help fix the core so we can start delivering things faster and at higher quality.
So there's two words that you used in describing each of those areas, each of those service areas, that I think are particularly instructive, and one word is consultants and the other word is advisors. And it sounds like what you're trying to create is a group of people who are equally able to describe mission capability and IT capability to non-IT people to be able to do what we talked about earlier in our conversation, which is provide solutions for mission delivery that just happen to be IT rather than provide some IT service for a reason that's not necessarily distinguishable.
That's exactly right. Like we're problem solving, right? Not solutioning. And so the key there is how do we engage with the programs and listen, and then also engage with their users who they're supposed to serve and help inform on these new methodologies to figure out where's the right place for us to go, and then they inform what services and products we deliver, not us coming up with them to push on them.
What's the reception to that been like? Because it strikes me that the reception. There's probably not a big landscape. I would seem to me, as an outsider looking in, the reception would either be, this is the greatest thing that I've ever seen, and I'm so happy that these people really get what I'm trying to accomplish, or who do these hotshots think they are trying to tell me what's going on here?
Well, I think it's like the answer to that is yes. Right? So you get a little bit of both of that. The vast majority of the reaction here at EPA has been, particularly on the program side, is when they heard about the services, almost everybody universally is like, I would love to use those services, right? So it's overwhelming excitement. I think that it's a little harder when it's a little easier here at EPA because I was there doing it at GSA for 18F, and so I have examples to point to. And the other thing is, you know, people learn by doing and seeing, and they want to experience it for themselves. So we're actually engaged with 18F on all five of these services, and their 18F is helping us stand those up faster than if we would have started fresh and anew. So we're leveraging that shared service over at 18F to build the capabilities faster here at EPA and then eventually take those over ourselves and scale it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And when somebody comes to you and says, okay, out of those two extremes, how do I get more of the former while I'm glad this exists rather than the latter? Who do these people think they are? How do you advise them to move and to provide the services or present them or talk about them in a way that they do generate more of the wow rather than the who do they think they are?
And let me just, I want to ask a little clarifying question. When you say who is the, you were saying how do I present to who? Is it everyone or programs?
To the stakeholders at the agency. When folks come to you and say, I'm going to try to do this at my agency, department of whatever it may be, and I want to make sure that as these consultants and advisors and these other service providers go out and talk to the stakeholders in my organization, I want to make sure that the reception is more, a lot more, of the, wow, I'm really glad these people are here and I can take advantage of their expertise, rather than the example I provided earlier of who do these people think they are trying to come in and tell me how to run my thing.
Sure. I think the key there is following methodologies in the lean startup methodologies. And what you want to do is really just roll up your sleeves and get to work. So you want to clear a path that people want to see change. There's a whole lot of a desire for change, so that works well. And you really want to just roll up your sleeves, get to work, and show people. Because the more discussions you have, right, the more sort of trapped you get into what we'll refer to as like vaporware, things that aren't real, right? Like, mm-hmm. Let's talk about what we're really talking about. Let's show you. And you definitely need cover from above to be able to show people things that can be done, and then you need to have those discussions. But there's really no avoiding the angst, if you will. Like, I want to make sure I'm not coming across as it's all rosy, right? Like, there, at the end of the day, this is change management, and there are people that are very comfortable with methodologies and practices that they've been using for years, decades in some cases, right? And, you know, there's you really, in the case of winning people over, try to focus on the early adopters, show things, don't talk as much about them, and you start winning people over, and more and more they start coming over and jumping in, and that to me is sort of the best strategy forward to get started with it, and then it steamrolls and you'll figure out where to go next after that.
Greg, I really appreciate your insight, especially in that area, because this is a case of some people's apple carts being turned over, and I'm grateful for your time to talk about your work today. Continued good luck to you.
Thank you.